not an email, but a tweet from Peter at P94 at home. Gods, GRM is such a master at creating an environment. This chapter felt so brutal and had an impending doom hanging over it. Whether it was being caught, Ramsay showing up, or the ever-present doom of winter and the storms that come with it. Storms that raged for 40 days and 40 nights, for a year, for 10 years. Storms that buried castles, cities, and whole kingdoms under 100 feet of snow. Owned to the fact that through all this doom and brutality, our characters clung to a desperate hope that they could survive. Gods, this book is good. Thanks, Peter.
We really be doing a switcheroo this week with the owns at the top of the episode, because we just felt like this one really set the tone and set the mood. So we were looking for, like, you know how sometimes we start the podcast with a quote from the chapters? We were looking for one of those, and then we thought, what if?
What if?
What if Peter becomes the beginning of the chapter?
Theon 1 or Theon 7, if you're reading in our Feast with Dragons reading order, the chapter in which Theon and Jane Poole escape.
The last Theon
from
chapter.
Winterfell.
Or the first.
I don't know. Kind of confusing, if I'm being honest.
This chapter,
we may have made it a little bit more confusing for everyone. Sorry about that.
Sorry. The chapter is so freaking good, though. You and I have had a couple, like, as we normally do, convos behind the scene about this chapter. And I've read it like 3 times because this chapter is very good. And I'm very excited to talk about it. As you've been saying, I feel like a broken record because I say this every episode, but it's just been so much fun after we did the Winds chapters. And as we're here at this last Theon chapter in the reading order, we're at this end game, or where in the story we're at end game stuff. And so
feels
the
like
theories, endgame. Yeah, like the theories and the questions that I have and the stuff that we can talk about. I don't know. It's very exciting to me. And so I know there's a couple questions that we've already talked about, and as per usual, I have lots of questions to ask you, and so I'm kind of excited to dive into this. I also just really like Theon, so here we are.
You like Theon?
Yeah, I do.
Why?
I just really like Theon's arc, and I'm very interested in where he is going to go. I feel like Theon is one of the few characters who, in my mind, has really been able to go in this roller coaster effect of, like, good guy, bad guy, good guy, bad guy. And I think that the trajectory that he's on with becoming Theon again and with where his story may or may not be going, which we are going to talk a little bit about with, like, Bran and how he's hearing things and his connections with the Greyjoys. Well, he is a Greyjoy, but I just think that he has some extra lore around him, which is exciting to me after having such a rocky up and down arc of, like, which, quote unquote, which side he's on. And so I feel like it's been done in a way that is more believable.
So it's not because you feel sorry for him?
I don't really feel sorry for him. I mean, I guess I do sort of feel sorry for him. And I know that nobody is going to deserve to be treated the way that he was treated. But, you know, as Theon says in this chapter, he's done his own fair share of not good things. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't deserve what he's been given. But I think it's helped him become a man that is going to do great things, which is very exciting to me.
There's like a chance for that, it seems. His perspective about himself has changed. And I think it's changed in the course of the last few chapters with him, mm-hmm. the way that he regards himself. And I think what you were just quoting was that moment when he was with the Spear Wives and he was thinking about them, mm-hmm. and comparing himself to them. And he's like, you know what? They're telling me not to quote Ned Stark's words, and they're right. telling me not to feel comfortable, and that even if this plan works, don't feel good about yourself. We don't even like you, by the way. And he's, instead of being bothered by that, he's, for several reasons, he's been battered. He's been mistreated. He's been told that he's trash. He's thought he's trash. But in that moment, he was just like, I'm not so bad compared to y'all, or really compared to anyone else.
Right. I've done terrible things, betrayed my own, turned my cloak, ordered the death of men who trusted me, .. But I am no kinslayer. I mean, true. So, yeah, that's why I like Theon. I just think that he has work left to do. And I am hopeful and counting on the fact that it's a little bit more than just Bran telling him he's a good man. So, but we'll see, I guess.
That's so, right now in the book, if you're, like you sometimes say, reading for plot, get to Reek and spending all this negative time with him, eating rats, hanging out in the north where it seems like not a lot is going on. I mean, things are going on, but we're with the Boltons and none of us think that they're going to actually win.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And none of us think that we're going to actually spend a lot of time at the Dreadfort or the problem at Winterfell. I'd be much more interested in knowing how close Stannis really is and what it's going to look like whenever Stannis wins or loses, whether or not Jon's going to get involved, what really happens with the people that are supporting the Boltons at Winterfell. Mm-hmm. So why is he there? Is it like you said? I love Theon's arc. It's a very popular thing for, I feel like, folks to say. Theon's arc is so great.
Whatever, it's cliche. Come at me.
it sort of became that. But for me, reading this chapter and thinking about what's left with Bran and thinking about how the Weirwood trees work, all this stuff. I just had a live stream with Radio Westeros about this subject. Not about Theon, but about Bran. And I've been asking myself questions about the end of his story and something that I hadn't really considered before. I know that people have considered this, but for me personally, it's just been part of the struggle that's happening inside of the North and context on the people that screwed over the Starks, context to how it's gone for them and seeing the other lords inside of the North continuing to play the Game of Thrones. I thought that that was good context and it really dressed out the story. I didn't necessarily need it, but it's cool to read it. Not everyone is obsessed with Wyman Manderly as it seems, mm-hmm. or with what exactly is happening with Frey Pye. Who's involved? Who's turning their back on you? Really, they want to know, or at least it feels like to me, ultimately what's going to happen in Winterfell. And so coming back to Theon and reading about the hardness of life and learning about how cruel someone can be to him and thinking about whether or not he deserves it all the time. I feel like I kind of got the gist of that earlier when we were very stalwartly within Reek. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of a lot of those things. And so I feel like maybe that's part of the psychological state George wants us to be in. It's like, yes, we already learned our lesson, but in order for him to become such a trained person, like Ramsay, the way Ramsay made him, it has to be drilled in over and over and basically become our state. Are we ever going to get out of this? Mm-hmm. What's it ever going to be like? And then Bran speaks to Theon through the Weirwood tree, or at least it seems like that. Now the possibilities for the story, I feel like, are really opening up in a way that is almost humanly unsatisfying, because why is it Theon? We all agree.
But why not Theon? You know what I mean?
No, you're totally right. But didn't we all agree sort of early on that he was the worst for what he did to the Starks and for how easily he disrupted what was a really good strategy and what was a really good foundation against the Lannisters, just seemingly out of nowhere for no reason and getting him nowhere, upending everything and to make everything so difficult for Bran and for everyone leaving Winterfell, or at least wanting to leave Winterfell at that time. At least he didn't kill him. So there's
you're right. I mean, that we know that, but other people don't know that. I think that that's a good question of why somebody like Theon, but I feel like that we talk about this a lot, just like with the Song of Ice and Fire in general, there's not a lot of black and white in a Song of Ice and Fire. There's a lot of gray area, which I think makes it such a textured story and with so much depth. And so somebody like Theon, you try to put him into the good versus bad category and you can't, you know, as with every other character in this series. And so I feel like having somebody who, I don't know. I think that there needs to be good people out in the world of Westeros as everything falls apart. And Theon's already been through the ringer, and hopefully he can be a champion of goodness taking over as the story moves along. But I mean, the reality is where Theon's at with the Winds of Winter sample chapters, it looks like he's going to get executed, you know? Mm. So for all we know at this point,
that's going to be so cool.
This is the end of his story. And so, I think that for a chapter where this is the first time we're using Theon's name again, there is this, it's like that, it's this own that we read at the top, I thought, summed it up really well about this impending doom and this Theon's like pessimistic for good reason outlook and his inability to see out of the seemingly impossible situation. And I feel like there's just this like gloomy feeling with a little bit of magic weaved in that is just really exciting to me. And so as we think about what's going to eventually happen with Theon, potentially whether he gets executed, whether he gets told he's a good man, somewhere in between, you know, I don't really know, but I just think that to me, his arc isn't cheesy in a way that it could very easily fall into like tropey territory.
Yeah.
And it hasn't hit that way for me. So
not me, not yet. I think the stuff with Bran and the tree is awesome. I think that we talked about, I know that you watched the live stream sort of, so I'm just pretending like you have kind of an idea of what we talked about, but thinking about Blood Raven's power to communicate, mm-hmm. or to communicate or not, let's just say to use the Weirwood Net. His power compared to Bran's may not be as concentratable.
Right.
And so if that's what we're thinking about happens to Hodor, that in some way Bran is able to, not necessarily warg, but what he did with Theon back in A Ghost in Winterfell, I think it was, mm-hmm. where he heard his name, but the same things happened for Ned in a way. I think he said Winterfell, but it's more of a, I'm not warging, I'm just here, but I'm kind of warging. And so this kind of warg that happens with Hodor, whether or not it's interrupted by an attack on the tree or whether or not it's just a mistake of him being so casually present, or maybe he's surprised by something that happens in the vision. Like maybe Lyanna does ride up on a horse and it surprises him. Something happens where he changes enough of the chemistry within this person's head to hurt him, if that's what happens with Hodor. And so with Theon here, it seems like the same sort of thing has happened, but almost through like inception, like he gave him an idea. And the idea in this case was his name, mm-hmm. which I don't know if Bran or whoever is communicating through the tree or whether or not it's Theon himself. I don't know if they knew that that was the thing that needed to push him over the edge, but that's what set a lot of this into motion. And I liked what you said about it not being cheesy, because I like how it connects to Bran, and I would have felt a little bit annoyed if it hasn't been so earned for Theon and also so patient within this book, specifically with chapters like this. I think that I'm distracted by Mance and the Spearwives in general, but mm-hmm. when I'm not thinking about them, Theon stuff is really interesting to me, specifically of how it connects to Bran. Mm-hmm. But I love that George in this chapter was so realistic to continue to tell us that really, and it seems like this to me, I don't know if you picked up on it. I think that's kind of what you were just saying, but it seems like Theon is making these decisions to help people, or to escape at least, or to help the guys that we like, it seems, and then help Jane also. But really, because it still kind of serves him.
Of course.
He hasn't become this altruistic character that Bran has unlocked, and now he's this ultimate good guy. Theon is actually good arc. But he thinks that it's silly that the surviving stable boy is so hopeful. He's like, oh, I think the storm's about to be over. And Theon laughs to himself, and he's like, and that's, I think, the quote that Peter quoted at the top of the episode, the tales he heard from old Nan talking about winter that was so overwhelming that whatever you hope really isn't worth hoping for. And so in this case, to escape, to not escape, to stay. I'm kind of at the end of my rope because of people like Barbry Dustin and because of people like Bran. Imagine being around Barbry Dustin and instilling that much confidence in him, being around someone that didn't act like a Bolton, that didn't act like a vampire walking around in dark, sallowy corners or passageways, you know? Mm-hmm. It just started giving him a new way to look at it. And then I feel like he racked up enough momentum to go, I don't think so. Something's going to blow up here. And then now add the potential that Stannis is right outside. You've got horns going off. You've got drums sounding. There's so much tumult. I feel like it really pushed him to that edge.
He had a choice.
You think so?
I mean, well, he's back and forth this whole chapter about, in the beginning, whether or not he actually wants to leave. He thinks it's the wildest idea. And he thinks that it's not going to work. And that it's not smart to be doing what they're doing. And then the whole little fight breaks out, which we'll get into, and they're sent. If they're going to fight anybody, they might as well go fight Stannis. So they're sent away. I love that moment.
He's like, okay, you guys want to fight? We'll just start the attack early. Go for it.
Exactly. And so then they're forced to leave earlier because they've got to get ahead of this group that's marching towards Stannis. And so I feel like he's kind of backed into a corner a little bit. But I think, as we're talking about, just to kind of go back a second on what you were saying, he's kind of gaining all this momentum. And I just think that there's so much strength in this series and power in using your own name and remembering who you are. And I think that being reminded of his name, as he says, the old gods had known him and had called him Theon, as Bran's like somehow communicating to him what his name is. And we see in the sample chapters is the, whatever kind of birds those are,
ravens.
Crows are all saying his name over and over again. And, when Ramsay, I can't remember exactly, but when he starts calling him Theon, that whole thing to give fake Arya away, I think that just like we've talked about this, but just his ability to internalize who he is, names are just so powerful in this story. And Theon is repeating Jane's name over and over in his head because that's a reminder of like who she truly is. And we see that with Arya, we see that with Daenerys, we see that with Sansa all the time, of this callback to like who you are. I think it's just a callback to like who you are at your core and what your destiny is supposed to be. Ooh. Or something, you know? And so I think that for him, I think that the situation that he's in, he's kind of forced into it a little bit. I think that he would have twiddled his fingers a little bit longer if it was up to him. But I think that the chaos of the situation and kind of all the pieces fell into place where he has enough momentum from being reminded of that he's Theon and not Reek for him to then literally make the jump at the end.
And I've got no qualms using you, Abel, and your friends. Mm-hmm. Even though I think that you're going to be killed horribly and slowly if this goes wrong. And it's very likely that it goes wrong.
And it does for some of them. So I'm really excited to talk to you about this because when I first read this chapter for the very first time, I had no clue that Abel was Mance in the slightest. Like, to me, it was like, who's this random person who is somehow interested in any of this? And I still think that that's a good question, but you're talking about, I can't remember what you're talking about that made me think of this, but like, Theon is trying to hide the fact that fake Arya is fake from
the Abel. Jape is on you, Abel. You and your murdering whores, you'll die for the wrong girl.
Exactly. From quote unquote Abel, who is Mance Rayder, who's
a Star Wars villain.
Yeah, who's hiding his own identity from everybody else. And these people who their motive for doing what they're doing, I think, is maybe not necessarily super clear. And Jane's little slip up at the end when she screams and many more of them get killed and many more of the spear wives end up getting killed. And so I think that it's just like this very interesting situation where nobody is being upfront with their identity and the reasoning behind all the decisions that they're making are overcrossing each other in this way that makes it feel, you know, this music that is playing in the scene when Sansa and Theon run, are leaving Winterfell when they jump over the wall and they're running at the beginning. It's like one of my all time favorite songs in Game of Thrones. And I just, that song was just like playing through my head as I'm reading this chapter because there's just so much build up to that moment. What was the point I was saying?
It's leading. I don't know. I don't know what your point was, but I know I sort of get what you're saying, that it's leading to, it's like everything is falling into place and also falling out of place. But really what it's all about is the truth of the destination of what they're doing.
And why they're doing it. That's what I was going to ask you. So we've got Mance who's here. And Theon is so afraid that if anybody finds out that this isn't truly Arya, that they're not going to go through with it anymore, that they're not going to want to do this escape plan.
Mm.
What do you think? Do you think that Mance understands that Arya is actually Jane? Or do you think it even matters if he knows who this girl is? Like, what is his, like, the read on him, I guess? Because there's...
I think that Mance is aware that things could go in any direction, and he wants to position himself in the least danger possible. So he's playing his part well, and he's paying attention to how things go. And I think that he probably knows that it's not Arya.
I would think so.
You know?
Yeah.
You wrote down in your notes that he recognized John at the opening feast in A Game of Thrones. And so you figure that means that he recognized Arya,
mm-hmm.
or was able to rather not recognize Arya. But I also feel like, isn't it kind of common knowledge at this point? Like, how much do people really believe that this is Arya Stark? I'm not sure.
Right. That's a good question.
I'm not sure. Also, I'm not sure what kind of information regarding the way Arya looks or Ned's kids looked in general would still be in his mind after all he's gone through.
Right.
Or whether or not he's necessarily thinking about that. But I don't really know what Melisandre told him to go down there. He's just a character I don't trust overall because of his ability, really. He was there at the beginning of A Game of Thrones. I don't trust that guy, and I don't trust him now. he's there right now. But the thing with Aemond and the Spearwives is just that they almost seem like the lowest quality invention of the story. Like, even the way they talk, they're just kind of so present, but also not really there. And now they die, or at least it seems that way. I'm not sure if they'll come back, but maybe maybe it's a mechanic of Theon. It's like I was saying, he's so focused on his goal here. He doesn't really care what happens to him. They're a means to an end. And so knowing a lot about them doesn't really matter either. And they maybe truly are a means to an end. But Mance being there is such a strange wild card. If I'm assuming that what Melisandre and Jon agreed was the reason why he's going, if that's really what he's doing, then maybe he's just really trying to get Arya and leave and survive, beat Winter back to somewhere, and continue to, I don't know, have friends that help him with his cause. How much does he still care about the wildlings leaving the wall and settling further into the gift? Is he thinking about winter and the oncoming storm as well? And not just literally, but figuratively. I'm not really sure because he's got a lot of stuff that could potentially be interesting to him. He's a wild card because he knows a lot about how the world operates.
It's interesting that like you're talking about Melisandre. I mean, if he's sent down there really just to save Arya, and he shows up and he sees Arya and he's like, this ain't it. I'm just going to turn around. Cause very obviously the situation at Winterfell is kind of a mess. So it's like, why would you insert yourself into that situation if you don't
have to?
That's
a good point. Why would he stay as well?
Right. That's what I'm wondering. And so, you know, there's theories that like he wrote the pink letter too, which I don't necessarily subscribe to, but that gives him more power, I feel like, than he maybe, sure. Like you're saying, like maybe more than he deserves, but it's just interesting because, well, it just, I mean, seems, why not? Like,
if he can do that, why not? You know, why not continue to shake stuff up? Because that's what really everyone's doing right now at this point. Mm-hmm. So why not?
You know what I keep, you know that you probably, maybe you don't, maybe somebody listening will truly understand me, but you know that TikTok where it's like, you did this for what? You did this for what? It's like, no. A sound that people use on TikTok that I think is really funny. That's just what goes through my mind when I think of Mansplainer. It's like, you did this for what? Like, what are you trying to get at here?
Well, so. What are singers like? You know, isn't there a quote about that in this chapter? I forget.
Maybe.
I forget what the quote was.
I highlighted so much of this chapter that I'm having a hard time finding anything useful.
It was about the kind of people that singers are.
Yeah.
And I think that it said a lot about Mance Rayder in general, about his sort of personal story. He's got nobility attached to his name because he was the king beyond the wall. But apart from that, you know, his ability precedes him. Mm-hmm. And he's involved in really cool stuff continually. And look how capable he is. It's just like,
he's powerful.
Yeah, he's really powerful. He's casually moving among what is a really stressful situation for other people. And the whole time Winter's falling literally on top coming. Of them. Yeah, literally coming.
Yeah.
What do you think he wants?
That's what I'm saying. I have no freaking clue. Like, I don't know if this is just, like you were saying, kind of a step. So I think this ties into another question that kind of comes up later in the chapter is, and we touched on that briefly already, but when Theon says Winter's coming and Rowan is with him and she's like, what the heck? You can't use Ned Stark's words.
A little random.
Well, and knowing that somebody like Rowan who shouldn't care about somebody like Ned Stark, you know what I mean? I know that there's a respect, and I know like Mance Rayder has a respect for him. And there's a little bit of mutual feelings there. But to me, that was also another interesting point of like, what motivates that kind of reaction to something that would seemingly not be sacred to somebody like Rowan or the rest of the Spear Wives, or what's Mance's motivation? And maybe all of it ties back to whatever they're trying to accomplish.
The North remembers.
Yeah, you know, maybe it's just there's something. Heartfelt. What do you mean?
I don't know if it's North remembers. But oh. You think it's connected to just the goals of the wildlings in general?
Yeah, like maybe there's just some other major motivation. Like you were saying that Mance might have, like just to further his people or to keep everybody safe in his mind. Like this all plays into something else going on that we don't know about.
Also, Rowan could be lying. She could have said that because it would be, she's supposed to be from around there, right? So it could have been mm-hmm. something that she assumes that Northern people would say to him.
That's
in
true.
That moment.
That's true.
But again, just a little bit of confusion around the Spearwife stuff in general, not necessarily from a reading comprehension perspective, just from it is just so stuck in there, it feels. Mm-hmm. It's just like it's so conveniently there. There's this guy who's helping him and these people, and they might be doing some of the murders. But again, I think it might be a function of Theon's mentality overall, just not caring. And also, yeah. If you think about how Ramsay has allowed Theon to become so casually kind of a leader amongst the people in the kitchens, which is dangerous when you've got someone that's as much of an enemy deep down as
like giving him too much power.
Giving him too much power, yeah, because mm-hmm. he can sneak around like he did in this chapter. And if you give margins, if you hold someone down like that, they're going to find a way to use those margins against you because that's all that they have. I know that all too well because my dog is exactly like that.
It's a brilliant plan I love having Theon's narration as they go through this plan. And first they're walking up, first they're like in the kitchens getting the water and he's like, they should be flirting with everybody and they're not flirting. Mm-hmm. This is going to be the thing that's going to get us outed. And then they're walking up the steps and he's thinking of old Nan and they come into Jane's room and she's huddled in the corner and Theon's thinking about all of these people that they're sneaking past and what's going to happen to them because he understands kind of how things work here. And yet he continues on, and then things start working for a minute. It says for a moment, Theon felt almost giddy because he's realizing, hey, this could actually happen and work and be real. And
I don't have a terrible all power God that controls my life named Ramsay. He's actually just a human after all.
Right.
Look at all these different lines of defense we've got past.
Yeah. What a wild thing. And I think it's so lucky and probably done on purpose that Ramsay was distracted and busy with some other things that we don't, we get snippets of maybe what's going on, but we don't have any like real answers necessarily. I mean, we see what's going on with like the Freys and the Manderleys and
so satisfying
whisperings and things like that. But you know, there's obviously a lot of chaos happening that we don't even see in this chapter that kind of sets everything up just perfectly enough for him to be able to slither on his way out of there. So.
Well, I mean, it was going to happen. Things were always going to get weird for the Boltons after what they were doing and using Theon Greyjoy to marry a fake Arya to his bastard Ramsay and Winterfell and calling for Manderly to be there and then for
and his five chins.
Then getting the support from the South to sort of enable what they're doing, but not actually getting any physical support while Stannis is there, while Winter is falling. Things are... we're always going to get weird for them. And I feel like it was coming to a head for a long time. And the vibe in these last few Theon chapters have been just a sort of level of unrest that you could tell was being done by some kind of interior terrorism. But at the same time, there's
people
always
are dying.
Yeah.
Just out of left and right.
But like I said, it's such a weird situation that they have going on there in Winterfell. This stuff was always, I feel like it was always going to happen. It was always going to come to a head. And then here in this chapter, we're in the Great Hall of Winterfell. And it's just so perfectly plays out. You really get the vibe of what's happening. And it feels like it was always going to come to this. And I don't even need the threat of Stannis being outside for the context to be as sweet as it was, but that just adds to it. For Roose to come in, and you're just imagining the vibe of everyone that's been kind of quarantined together is what it sort of seems like. And we all sort of spill out into the same dining area every morning. Mm-hmm. And here's Roose, Fat Waldo with his retinue of guys, Aenys Frey with the worst name in the book. Everyone's, you know what I mean? They all come out and just... nothing's going on, and Theon's thinking, and he's watching Abel and the washerwomen eat fried bread. Everything's chill. It's just the way it was always supposed to be.
Everything is chill, except for the part where nothing is chill at all.
Except for the part that everyone is completely on edge. And then Ramsay walks in, and Theon can automatically tell that Ramsay is not having a good day. He's so sensitive to his master. Just a whiff of walking in the room.
Yeah.
He's like,
he has to be. It's a survival.
He has to be. It's survival. Exactly. He's like, what will happen? Oh no. You know what? Actually, my plan, the whole plan, everything is wrong. And he's battling back and forth between this potential to move forward within confidence or to crumble within the threat of the tiniest thing going wrong. Ramsay's attitude. And I think that the situation with little Walder being murdered was such an inspired choice from George. It's like you can tell these chapters needed to go no longer. It's like
what do you mean?
Well, all these other deaths led to this one.
Yeah.
We've known these people. It almost feels like we don't know them, but think back. We've known them for a long time. Mm-hmm. And if you're using the appendixes in the book, or if you're using A Search of Ice and Fire, or if you've read them enough to be able to have a sort of photographic recollection of different vibes that you felt within the story, to be Theon in this moment and to be in Winterfell with Roose Bolton at the charge and being scared of Ramsay in the middle of all of it, narratively, it's so sweet to have little Walder be brought in, probably murdered by big Walder after all is said and done.
Right.
And for this to be used to stir up trouble. I don't want to say who I think necessarily is causing the trouble yet because I want to ask what your opinion is. But either way, this is what it is. Whether or not it was done out of passion or whether or not it was done for a scheme, George is stirring up trouble right now with this. And it just pushed it all to the right moment. And It was just really satisfying to read. So that was the intro of this podcast episode about this chapter. We're 40 minutes in.
He says, when asked, Wyman Manderly says, though mayhaps this was a blessing, had he lived, he would have grown up to be a Frey.
Holy crap. So we have to read that whole thing. You can't just do a piece of it.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to get the one liner at the end.
That was such a stressful moment. What do you think? Do you think that the phrase did this themselves to cause an issue? Or do you think that this was done by the Manderlys to cause an issue? Do you think that Theon did this because he doesn't know what he's doing? Do you think the Spear Wives were lying? What do you think?
You didn't give the answer I was going to pick was who cares?
I guess it is just a means to an end.
Yeah, absolutely not Theon. I mean, to me, this is all just part of the chaos that eventually allows Theon.
But it says so much about the truth of the situation, though, because Manderly is involved as well, and we know that he's got.
It's like, what is he doing? You know,
I feel like he's part of our. He's like an ally to sensibilities that we align ourselves with, and it's nice to see someone who's aware of. He's like, I'm probably not going to survive life overall, and of course, but also maybe not this Winterfell stuff. So he's, instead of being a coward, he refuses to play along with such lameness, even though he is. He's also just so annoyingly him within all of it, and there's just something sweet about someone who, in the face of all that, especially in the face of all of them starving or potentially about to become people who are starving if they survive any further. Roose has guards posted in the kitchen, for God's sake. This guy continues to eat at a rate that embarrasses everyone around him. And it's right in the face of these people who are, you know, so bad that they kill people that disagree with them. And yet Manderly has so much power and so much sway that he gets to do this. I just think it's satisfying, but also indicative of the falseness that's within all the stuff that people here say that they believe in, because it's all just a big hypocritical mess. And it sort of comes to a head when Hosteen Frey accuses Manderly of organizing this death for Little Walder.
I like it better if he's not behind it, for exactly the same reason as you're talking about, just the kind of the vibe that he's putting off as he's eating his way through Winterfell, and this little quip that he's got here about growing up to be a Frey. I like the idea that he's stoking the fire and causing problems just because he finds it entertaining without ever having an active role in it. Like, this isn't something that he did, but he's enjoying the fact that the Freys are pissed about it, you know, like he's gonna be happy about it. And so I don't think he did it. I think it's probably Big Walter, but you know, I don't know it. Or if it's the Spear Wives, you know, using this as the last straw to then put the rest of the day in motion, because who knows?
Yeah. It seems like we had to do it now because of, the level of drums and the level of horns. And so perfect storm. Maybe this is just a product of the drums and everything in general. Like, this could have just been the natural world itself. There was no way to avoid it. Something was going to happen. It could have been as simple as
the music was too hype.
The music was too hype. It could have been a disagreement between the two Walders that culminated into this, but it's no secret that Manderly and pretty much everyone else in the North feels that way about Freys. So him saying, so young, though mayhaps this was a blessing, had he lived, he would have grown up to be a Frey. I mean, that was always going to happen. So he's just being real. I mean, maybe it's just you can't write the bad guys without it being cartoonish if there aren't some people there that are willing to annoy them, if the bad guys aren't completely overwhelmingly winning. And they're really not completely overwhelmingly winning. That's why there's someone like Wyman Manderly to sort of mess things up on the inside in the first place.
It felt like such a classic whodunit kind of moment as they're all sitting there and all of this stuff is going on and the finger is being pointed at,
I confess,
Wyman. And
he wipes the grease from his lips with his sleeve. It continues, I confess that I know little of this poor boy.
It's so good because it's like you could picture everybody sitting there and like the flourish of the finger being pointed at him and the who me, like the slow, like as he's finishing chewing his food or something, you know, before he says right. anything. Like it just is this like beautifully cliche-ish almost whodunit moment that the camera's turning, is like the room is feeling the space in the room. I don't know. I thought it was
funny. For it to be happening while everyone is at the end of their rope, basically, after mm-hmm. all that. Because we remember what it was already like to be in that chamber. There was a time when Theon wouldn't have been drinking, I don't know what he called it, ale, I guess? Or I'm imagining, I can't even, I don't know what it's called when it's that thick that you can chew on it. Like, is it still, are you still drinking beer at that point? What is it?
Some weird homebrew kind of like
so thing. That's the situation that he walks in there and that's the standard. It was wine before, and before wine he wasn't really interested, but now he's just drinking beer that he can chew on. And it says that the plan might not work, but you know, a few more of these and the plan might work. So it's like everything is relying on this moment, but also winter is coming. So does it all really matter? Mm-hmm. And that is the perfect situation for Wyman to be so into how he feels about things and to right. to troll in the and that's why Hosteen Frey's action was so insane afterward, because it was it's insane for him to be so personally nonchalant when everyone is just trying to like, they're all so desperately trying to get theirs. They're like, remember right. the Four of the Five Kings and winter's coming and it looks like it's all not going to go in your favor anyway. And he's just eating all their food the whole time. Like, ha ha ha.
I want to read part of it because it's just hilarious. Sir Hosting.
Are you going to read like Dan Carlin?
No. Do you want me to? I can't. Yes, please. You should.
You should.
Sir Hosteen Frey ripped his long sword from its scabbard and leapt towards Wyman Manderly. The Lord of White Harbor tried to jerk away, but the tabletop pinned him to his chair. The blade slashed through three of his four chins in a spray of red blood. Dot, 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 dot. Lord Locke was shouting for a maester as Manderly flopped on the floor like a clubbed walrus in a spreading pool of blood. Around him, dogs fought over sausages.
It took 20 Dreadfort spearmen to part the combatants and put an end to the carnage. By the time the last 6 White Harbor men and 2 Freys lay dead upon the floor. Or sorry, that was it. By that time, a dozen more were wounded and one of the bastard boys, Luton, was dying noisily, crying for his mother as he tried to shove a fistful of slimy entrails back through a gaping belly wound. Lord Ramsay silenced him, yanking a spear from one of Stillshank's men, remember him, and driving it down through Luton's chest. Even then, the rafters still rang with shouts and prayers and curses, the shrieks of terrified horses and the growls of Ramsay's bitches. There we go, sorry. The shrieks of terrified horses and the growls of Ramsay's bitches. Stillshank's Walden had to slam the butt of his spear against the floor a dozen times before the hall quieted enough for Roose Bolton to be heard. I see you all want blood, the Lord of the Dreadfort said. I mean, it's just, this is what it looks like whenever the bad guys that aren't the top level bad guys kind of get a run of the place. Mm-hmm. It's one step up from where the Greyjoys would be if they continued holding this place.
Right. You've missed the best part. Not really the best part. All of it's the best part. Hosteen Frey's sword.
Oh, I have this written down. Come on now. Hosteen's Frey's sword was red almost to the hilt. Blood spattered, speckled his cheeks like freckles. He lowered his blade and said, as my lord commands, but after I deliver you the head of Stannis Baratheon, I mean to finish hacking off Lord Lard's.
Is it Hosteen? Hosteen?
Good question.
Hosking?
Ha? Yeah, it's ha. Of all people, how do you mess that up?
Because it's not, it's like, if you say it like, anyway, if you say it like my last name, then
honestly,
I'm
George probably says it 3 different ways.
Yeah, that's actually, I found so much comfort in that because nothing matters, so.
Outside, the snow still fell. The snowmen the squires had built had grown into monstrous giants, 10 feet tall and hideously misshapen.
They need to save their energy
winter
for...
is coming.
It says, enough, roared Lord Ramsay. My father has spoken. Save your wrath for the pretender, Stannis. Then they peace out. It's just wild times. And I thought it was very good. And then Theon has no choice but to get the heck out of there.
Did you see the crow moment when he was holding it up and talking about Stannis and the letter and telling the men to go fight now? Do you think that he was responding to information that he got about Stannis, or do you think that he was just bluffing for peace, trying to get them to move on?
Or if the information that he did get, quote unquote, from Stannis, is that even real or not?
Or about Stannis, not from real. Stannis.
Right, Stannis right.
Just writing letters. Right.
Hey, like, just wanted to check in.
This is where
in.
I'm going to be. It's called the Crawfish Village. We're going to be fighting over a frozen lake. It's going
to
be awesome.
Just wanted to let you know that we're still alive. Everything's okay.
Yeah. Also, Aenys Frey. What's that guy up to?
I miss him. I mean, I don't know. I think to me, it's just like, let's just use it as another. Let's just add it to the chaos. Like, it's just another piece to the getting people to do what? What am I saying? It's because I don't know the answer, so I don't know what to say.
I think it's what they deserve. I think it's what they've earned. I think this is where it's all headed because it's the amount of work that they did to cover their asses. If they really thought that the Manderleys were going to cause trouble within Winterfell, then why are they there? Did you really need people that weren't on your side in the first place? There's a lot of questions that you could ask the Boltons, and I feel like they did what they thought was necessary, but I don't know if anyone, including Stannis, everyone right now, I don't know if they've really planned what it could mean to deal with the kind of winter that's coming. And I think that that's the overarching presence behind all that stuff in the chapter.
Right.
He's looking around and seeing the snowmen that are now horrendously large, and we're reading about the tunnels that they've dug to basically navigate Winterfell. Mm-hmm. It's all sort of led here. That's why it's exploded like this. You've got dogs eating sausages. I'm not sure why the dogs didn't just eat Manderly at that point. Also, go on, please.
I think it's funny to have this image of him laying there while they're all fighting over whatever sausages got spilled as he fell to the ground.
Blubbering.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I may have slipped into an alternate timeline because I was like, I don't know, man, 450 episodes. I don't remember why I'm manually dying right here.
Right. And it feels really? Like he does for a second.
It feels like he dies. I was like, this is completely, this can't be the thing, but it didn't stick out to me before. It didn't stick out to me enough to be emotionally tied to the moment. But I mean, one of the more epic moments of the series for him to be making fun of the phrase within the belly of the beast.
It's so good. It's so
funny. But also
funny.
Shout out to Hosting Frey for that move. That was ridiculous. He kicks the table and pins him to his chair and then goes to slash for his throat. That's how desperate things are right now. But also warranted about the phrase. You probably just shouldn't be a Frey at this point.
It's also just like the energy there, because you look at somebody like Ramsay and Roose who are in charge of the place and the kind of energy they're putting out into the universe. It's like everyone's just getting extra hyped up.
All these
guess.
Margins, guys. Ramsay, yeah. Overconfident in Theon, distracted. How's this going to happen?
Just enough. And he jumps and he makes it.
Him seeing Jaime and realizing through what she had said and what he had experienced that her struggle was similar to his, I think really did it in for him. And it did it in for me too, thinking about what we were talking about at the top of the chapter. I was asking if you had felt sorry for Theon. Whether or not you do feel sorry for Theon, anyone listening, Jane Poole didn't sell out Winterfell, didn't kill any of the Miller's kids.
She's completely innocent.
And the same thing's happening to her.
Yeah. And you can see, I thought something that was very interesting was you see all the Spear Wives, they react to seeing her. There's like bite marks on her, and they see that, and I felt like they had this like very visceral reaction, which to me also painted a more gruesome picture of what's actually happening to Jane, and the way that she reacts to, you know, tell Ramsay I love him. She's crying and she's, you know,
they trained me. I love him.
Completely innocent in this situation. And it's not that I think Theon deserves anything like this, like that's, or that he should be punished for everything he's been through. But I do think, you know, Jane is extremely innocent in this situation. And so if I feel bad for somebody, I'm going to feel bad for her because she's helpless. She can't help herself.
And it's weird because there's symmetry in some ways to what happens to Theon, but not what happens to Jane. And it's just like one of those negative functions of the story where the small folk or the smaller folk almost have inordinate punishments just because they're not as important as the rest of everybody else.
Right.
It's like, damn.
It's like Jane Poole's not a quote unquote main character of like Westeros. And so she's just going to get screwed over. And I feel like we see often in, especially A Feast for Crows, how all of this war and bloodshed is affecting the normal, like the normal people who are just out here trying to live their lives and to die for their land and to protect their families. And they're all getting the short end of the stick, and there's no glory in that, you know? And somebody like Theon, he's about to be Bran's like little buddy, and he's gonna like have adventures with the three-eyed raven, you know?
Maybe
he's gonna
be like okay. His servant.
Right, maybe, but somebody like Jane Poole is just gonna live with the tragedy or not live at all with everything that she's experienced. And so, not to necessarily talk about the show, but I think so much of an issue that I had with Sansa being put in this situation, like I had many issues with Sansa being put into this situation. And to me, that was like my breaking point with Game of Thrones. And I think part of that is dismissing this underlying story of somebody like Jane Poole and the sacrifice that somebody who is a seemingly like, I don't want to call her a rando because she's not a rando at all, but she's not the hero of the story. I feel like those stories are just as important as somebody like a Sansa Stark, you know?
That's such a good point. It's also just more realistic.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what George R. Martin's trying to say. Real texture. It's someone from before, so it's not a totally random person, but at the same time, it's in this case, she's so easy to discard and just leave in a room like this.
Right, exactly. Because of who she – because she doesn't have the last name. You know, so
if it's also faded, if it keeps happening to just everyone perfectly in the story that we all know,
right?
There's so many different moving parts happening.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm happy that she's for now out of there. And I felt like Theon, I don't know, their little connection that they've got and how that helps him remember and all of that, I think is really sweet. And so
I was going to ask you about that. Do you think that Reek is really dead?
No.
You don't think so?
Mm-mm. I don't think so.
What do you think it would take in either direction for Reek to go either way?
Away. I mean, the psychological trauma that he has lived with, I don't think that Reek is ever going to fully go away. I think that that's going to be an Achilles heel for Theon throughout the rest of the story, because, you know, something, again, to talk about the show, Theon just like snaps out of it. In the show, it's like his sisters tells him that you're feeling better, and he's like, oh yeah, you're right, I am feeling better. Like, oh yeah, I am fine now. And so I don't fathom a world in which Reek doesn't follow him through everything else that he goes through throughout the remainder of his time, just because I think if nothing else, his time here at Winterfell with the Boltons has taught him a lot about who he is and kind of who he wants to be. And like, he thinks a lot. And we even see in this chapter, he's thinking about Rob, and he's like, I should have been with him. I should have died alongside of him. He spends a lot of time thinking about the decisions that he's made and the mistakes that he's made. And so I think that those things are going to influence him going forward, as I was kind of saying at the beginning of the episode. And so I don't think who he is as Reek is ever going to fully go away. I can easily see him sort of slipping in and out of these episodes or states as he tries to move forward, especially if he's got some sort of connection with Bran. And if he's, I don't know if we talked about this, but maybe I mentioned it already, but there's this idea that because Theon went through all this trauma, that then opens up his ability, like his third eye, his ability to hear or even see.
That's an interesting way to think about it.
Well, because Bran, I thought it was interesting because it was compared to Bran, who was able to use this ability once he fell. And he went through like all this physical and emotional pain, just like Theon went through. And so that kind of gave him the opportunity to.
Well, he's certainly more empathetic to all of his surroundings as judged by these POV chapters. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's, I feel like he would almost have to lose his mind to have some kind of a strange connection to the green side. But
he has.
I don't know.
Lost his
mind. Exactly. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So is that a function of it? The hearing voices, you know, are they coming from a place? I mean, Hodor lost his mind. Mm-hmm. And at least that's not book canon yet, but I think it's going to be something similar.
Right. And I think that Theon, when we talk about him like losing his mind, I think he's going to be able to continue to function and like be fairly, like he's going to be okay. But I think that maybe some of that trauma, him tapping into that on occasion, or maybe his connection with Bran is going to bring out some of that trauma. I don't know, but I definitely see it playing a factor.
That is interesting. I mean, he'll be used to this dynamic because he's been a slave for a long time. When he talks about his past life, we talked about killing the Miller's kids. He fucked that dude's wife.
That was when he wasn't
around. But it's just how it is because he was Theon Greyjoy.
I know, but steward, it added this layer. Steward,
it was such a real layer too, but steward of Ned Stark. The Miller wasn't around. They're probably riding horses all the time and going to these places. He and has such a personal story with this lady.
I didn't realize, I mean, of course we're not supposed to realize until this moment, but like that makes that whole Miller's kids thing 1,000 times
so
worse.
So deep.
Like
knowing. Because he knew exactly where to go. Yes, he knew exactly what to do.
With a relationship with their mom. Like it's just, wow, yeah. That really messed me up.
I know. But here's the thing. That same guy
is messed up.
I know, but everyone is. And that same guy was Rowan said, gave him shit for talking about the kids, Miller's kids, or mm-hmm. talking just the North remembers thing. He was like, I could kill you. He was thinking to himself and his fingers twitched and Ooh. Itched because he wanted yeah. so desperately just to, you know, I could, especially don't care because of Ramsay has got my back and because winter's coming and I'm already maimed beyond. I mean, I feel like after I lost a few of the things that Theon lost, I would have gone way deeper into the darkness than he had, but he's still holding it together somewhat.
He remembers who he is.
He remembers who he is and he doesn't stab her. And then later on in the chapter, when the Freys sound their trumpets to leave, he's again disheartened by the confidence of the people that are working for Ramsay. And he thinks again, his fingers twitch again. Let me just read it. Reek might have done it, would have done it, in hopes it might please Lord Ramsay. These whores meant to steal Ramsay's bride. Reek could not allow that, but the old gods had known him, had called him Theon. Ironborn. I was Ironborn. Balon Greyjoy's son and rightful heir to Pike. The stumps of his fingers itched and twitched, but he kept his dagger in his sheath. So it looks like that connection that Bran has put inside of his mind with his own name, like you were saying, but also knowing about Jane, all this sort of added together to create the perfect soup for him to decide, I'll let the momentum go in this way. And then that escape where the music's playing and they're headed to the top of the wall.
Yeah.
And all of our allies that we don't know that much about, let's just think of them as projections of our subconscious. If we're Theon or if we're George R. R. Martin, they all start dying. Needlessly, almost just a quarrel. Oh, I forgot the rope. You know, like, duh, how about this thing to forget? It's been plugging me my whole life and it's led to this moment and it shoots through my body. Now what? Now what do I do? Do we act? I forget what the final thing is that he thinks about. Do you have it? I can skip to the end, but
about at the end,
it might be illuminating.
When he jumps?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got it.
It says, he and the girl were alone. So again, all of those projections are gone. if they take us alive, they will deliver us to Ramsay. And those were his choices. So rather than be delivered to Ramsay, ultimately, that's what it came back to. He knows that he does. He no longer wants to be involved with his master at all. And he's used to this. All of this has basically led to this. And it took all of this to break him out of that training, knowing I don't want to be back with that guy. Mm-hmm. Who's to say that he won't fall into a similar pace with Bran? Maybe he won't be, I mean, mistreated as much.
Like a master kind of relationship.
He's so conditioned for it already.
I think that Bran potentially, I know we have a lot of conversations about like Bran's role and whether he's going to use his power for good or for bad, but I don't think that Bran is ill-intentioned, and I think that he is going to have a little bit more sympathy for somebody like Theon. I don't see Bran being intentionally cruel or having any real sort of power over Theon on purpose.
But don't you think that Bran is going to be heading in directions that have already become a bit gray?
Oh, at and one so, quadrillion percent, yes. Like, I don't think Bran's a good guy. I don't really like Bran at all.
Okay, dumb question then. So,
no, it's a good
don't
question.
Don't you think that in the Winds of Winter, things are going to get more serious?
Are you asking like on a broad scale?
I just mean that
specifically with Theon and Bran.
if he's warging into human beings,
right?
Imagine how totally that could feel versus the physical pain that Theon is used to receiving. I just feel like it's dangerous.
Bran's going to warg into Theon?
I think Bran might know how to exploit Theon. And I think Bran might know that it's super valuable to have someone like Theon who's been brought as low as possible as someone he can have access to potentially use. I don't know if it's because of Theon's struggle that he can hear the communications. I don't know if that's the reason why Bran is continuing or whoever's continuing to focus on him, but mm-hmm. the sample chapter that we read with crows shouting tree, this is all just the volume is turned up too loud to ignore that something is strange is going on here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And again, this is not just the random Theon chapter where he escapes Winterfell. This is connected to everything.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that there is going to be a connection between Theon and Bran. I love that. And I'm hopeful that Bran, I was going to say, I was like, well, Bran was friends with Theon. He's not going to mistreat him. And then you think about everything that he's doing with Hodor, who is also somebody deeply familial to him. I would hope for Theon's sake that it doesn't get like that, while also knowing and understanding the path that Bran is on is absolutely, in my mind, a dark path. A not good path. Go ahead.
What were you going to say?
Bran just like becomes king at the end.
The worst he does is troll us. He just sits out in the yard.
Yeah, it's like the whole thing is like.
Honestly, that Bran would be the best thing ever. Yeah, if he knows everything, he's patient enough not even to be cruel. He's like, I'm just going to troll everyone.
Yeah. So I don't know. What do you think?
I think that there's a lot in this chapter that points toward people like Theon and seemingly everyone making a decision based on what the average is. The average of how much they get versus how much they're kind of screwing people over. And I think that that's sort of what Bran does whenever he wargs into Hodor and whenever he does pretty much anything. And Bran's nonchalant attitude at his age now.
It's messed up.
Without a lot of struggle, but he's had a ton of struggle. Mm-hmm. But I'm imagining something happening in the moment, something intense. Who knows what he would make okay, what he would make excuses for, what he would explain to himself.
Right.
And I think that if the story continues to get serious, like I said, what do you think is going to happen in the Winds of Winter? That if these two are talking to each other, I don't think that what he wants from Theon or whoever at this moment can be unsubstantial. Why else are these birds squawking so loudly? You know, what is so important about all this? Why? Why would it be so important?
Use Theon for something? Has Maybe. He like chosen him because, you know, pulled him out of his reekness to use him?
Maybe it was always supposed to be that way, and Bran doesn't know. And when I say always supposed to be that way, I mean maybe Bran had to have someone like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened that poetically it would be Theon. He's still here in Winterfell. I think it has a lot to do with proximity, but I think it could also have a lot to do with the kind of person that he is. That's really what it comes down to. Maybe it's a mixture of proximity and the kind of person that he is. Isn't that what kind of everything is? What's really available to you?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you mold that to the story.
Right. Well, Theon is there while Bran is seemingly able to like use that tree at Winterfell.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's There's very a lot exciting. More
to unfold though. A whole lot more to come out of it. Or at least I hope there is.
It's just wild to think that we know everything that we're going to know about Theon at this point. We've read everything.
Yep.
For him. And so the possibility of him, I think, and we talked about this in the Winds of Winter sample chapter, so I don't want to like get back into that discussion, but this idea of him, even though I don't remember what we talked about at all, but I assume this is what we talked about. Him like potentially being executed and how that might go down in the context that we've been talking today with Bran. I just think that that's going to be very interesting and I'm excited so about cool. it.
Yeah. It's if that's involving Stannis, we could legitimately be bringing in even another even more satisfying layer to Stannis's confusion right. to all the stuff in the north. He's like, "What? Someone's talking through birds and
that
a tree."
Makes you feel Theon. Bad for Stannis, almost. You know, it's like
yes, it does, but he deserves it. He thinks he's the one true king. He deserves it.
That's funny.
Oh boy, I hope none of this fate is so equal in real life.
Right.
Yeah.
Hilarious. Is it own time? I don't know what Let's I'm going to do.
Let's do it. I want to give my own to Wyman Manderly for his line about the phrase. We've Dang. Already read it a bunch, but it's so good.
That's what I wanted to give also, my own to, too.
You still can.
That's boring, though.
Sort of an own to Hosteen Frey. That was super violent, and it was the most respect I've ever had for a Frey. So Ooh. That was a cool moment. And another unofficial one I got to give to George R. R. Martin for – it was so unbelievably personal when Theon was walking up those stairs to Jane's room and remembering him walking those stairs 1,000 times before – and thinking about old Nan
You're
and
stealing
Mickon and
all of my owns.
Everyone and everyone else that was involved in his life growing up to pass before him as he was walking to that sort of next stage within his decision of how things are going to be within Winterfell was just so cool.
It was really powerful.
And so real, such a real thing. It was, to me, it wouldn't seem like it would be the obvious thing to write when you're trying to write a spooky book, you know, like, ooh, but it was exactly what it should have been.
Mm-hmm. Good. You stole my two owns, so that means I have to go down to number three. I'm going to give my own to... Wait,
you
were you
done? You
can
just give all the same ones. Yeah, I'm done.
Okay, sorry. I realized I just started assuming that you were done. Well, you have to be until you so you don't steal more of mine. I'm going to give my own to Holly. And the moment where... Listen, I'll read it to you. they are mid-escape. And they come up to one of the gates and they run into some guards. I'm going to read a couple paragraphs. It says, "Who goes there?" One called out. Theon did not recognize the voice. Most of the man's features were covered by the scarf around his face. Only his eyes could be seen. "Reek, is that you?" "Yes," he meant to say. Instead, he heard himself reply, "Theon Greyjoy," which is an interesting choice. "I have brought some women for you." "You poor boys must be freezing," said Holly. "Here, let me warm you up." She slipped past the guard's spear point and reached up to his face, pulling loose the half-frozen scarf to plant a kiss on his mouth. And as their lips touched, her blade slid through the meat of his neck, just below the ear. Theon saw the man's eyes widen. There was blood on Holly's lip as she stepped back and blood dribbled from his mouth as he fell. Then that's when Jane screams. Well, then Frenya does some stuff and then Jane screams. So I thought that was a cool moment. I loved that Theon identifies himself as Theon here. And then I also thought that what Holly did was what's up. Those are my elements.
Right on. I wish Jane wouldn't have screamed. I know. It's just like the worst time kind of to scream when they're breaking you out. I mean, read the room.
Poor girl.
Honestly. I mean, because of that sequence, though. Jeez.
Because of her scream, some of the spear wives don't make it out. So.
If you'd like to send us your own or tell us what you think about Theon and Bran's connection, particularly. Wondering what everyone thinks about that. If you've made it to the end of the material, you're probably pretty confused about it too. You can write to us on twitter.com at Game of Owns, or you can send us an email to contact@gameofowns.com. We also have a Facebook page, and we also have an Instagram page if you use social media.
And if you want to follow along with our reading order, you can find it at afeastwithdragons.com. And next time we're going to be talking about John, which is a thrill.
I think the chapter starts out with a physical description of Tormund Giantsbane, so you know it's going to be good.
So get ready for that.
Well, I was just going to say it's kind of crazy we've reached the end of Theon stuff.
I know, it's exciting. What were you gonna say? I was going to give a little plug for your solo project podcast that you're doing. So if anybody's interested, you can head over to patreon.com/gameofowns, right? Is that what our Patreon is?
I think it's goo. Oh, G-O-O.
Okay. Patreon.com/goo. And Zach is doing his own read through of the series from the very beginning, just like a little solo project. And so it's very good. So if you want to check that out, that's a little more A Song by Some Fire content coming your way.
Thank you. I'm trying to think, what do I have to plug for Hannah? She's got a private Instagram, so you can't get in that.
I don't really.
You can also check us out at OnlyFans.
No. I have to pee really badly. Please don't make me laugh. I do too. All
right. What else do we have to say?
Say goodbye.
That's all for the show today. Thanks for listening, everyone.
We'll see you guys soon.